Up next on episode 26 of Stack Overflow, Joel and Jeff answer 5 listener questions, mostly about social software design. Warning, this podcast features a cowbell. Really, from IT Conversations. Hi, this is Phil Windley. Today I'm excited to bring you another great program from Stack Overflow with Joel Spolsky and Jeff Atwood here on IT Conversations.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media.
And now, here's Stack Overflow.
Hi, Joel. We're back with another fabulous episode of Stack Overflow Podcast, brought to you by Jeff and Joel.
Do we have a new sponsor? I didn't know if there was some surprise, like the gummy bears for extra grubby children.
Stack Overflow Podcast is brought to you by Gummy Bears for Grubby Children. I can't say that with a straight face. We need to get a better sponsor.
That's right. We had talked about doing a lot of questions, because the last few shows we haven't done any at all.
That's true. We have 5.
Okay. Why don't we start with that then?
You just want to launch into the questions?
Yeah, I think so. I think we owe it to the audience.
No, like, how have you been? What's new? How's your 401k doing?
Nope, just right into the content, man. Okay. That's how we roll.
All right. Well, most of your questions here are about Stack Overflow, as a matter of fact. So let's just start throwing them out
there. Hey, Jeff and Joel. I've been really interested in the development of Stack Overflow's karma system since I've been trying to come up with one of my own.
This is Christopher Leary.
You guys seem to assume that there exists a mapping of actions to karmic weights that'll steer the whole user base in the right direction in a way that's also going to scale. I've read the transcript of Shirky's "A Group is Its Own Worst Enemy" talk, which made me wonder if this is even possible. Do you really think that a theoretical greatest possible weighting system would be good enough to deter the pathological users and encourage everybody else?
Yes. That's it. That's the whole question. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think this system we came up with, I mean, I don't pretend to have an idea of what the end state is for our system. I actually don't know. I mean, because there's going to be continued growth and reputation.
Yeah.
One thing we did early on that I think was hugely important and we should have done earlier was put a cap on how much reputation you can get in any given day. And I was just looking at a request on User Voice that someone thinks we should also have a cap on the amount of reputation you can get from any one response. John Skeet was noting that he felt it was a little unfair that he got 46 upvotes on a really simple answer to, I think it was a question about whether you should do loops like less than or less than equal to. It was like a really simple little thing, but he just felt like 46 upvotes was a lot for sort of an ephemeral thought like that.
Was that a question that, why did the question have so much attention on it?
I don't know.
Why were so many people looking at that question and voting it up?
I think the questions that anybody can relate to tend to get a lot of votes. So if you ask some really narrow technical question, only a very narrow technical subset of the audience is going to be able to understand it and, you know, read it and process it and vote on it, things
Absolutely.
Like that. But if you ask a really generic question, like, you know, say, what's your favorite programming cartoon? You know, everybody in the world can relate to that. And to a lesser extent, you know, how do you like to build loop structures? I mean, Everybody builds loops. It's all we do, right? So everybody's got an opinion about it. So a lot of people are going to have eyeballs on it and have input into it.
Mm-hmm.
And John, I thought, had a very nice considered opinion about this. And he's onto something because, like I said, until we had the reputation cap, it was sort of a huge looming problem. So I would say that's the number one thing I would look at is you have to have really strong limits in the system.
Maybe the
and then the full
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say maybe they should be logarithmic or something, you know, like Richter scales.
Yeah, I thought about that, but it gets hairy. I mean, it just seems complex at some level versus, you know, the one man, one vote rule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some people that even think the more reputation you have, the more your votes should count, which I think is extremely bad. Like, I think that's totally the wrong way to do the system.
Wait, don't answer that yet, because that's a question that we have coming up.
Oh, really?
We'll come back to that.
Yes, we'll come back to that. But I would say in building reputation-type systems, the other key thing that we looked at, so the central tenet, one being have some sort of built-in limits in the system. Mm-hmm. That's really important. And then two, try to make it so that other people give you reputation. It's like the whole Google model of PageRank, right, where you building a website, you can't vote for yourself. Only other people can vote for you. I think that's really important as well. So I would say those would be probably the two guidelines for anyone asking my opinion about this. Although, like I said, we have not seen all the ramifications of the system we've built yet. But so far, so good.
I think it would be fair to say that it was definitely our goal that this thing would, or it was our expectation that these things would change all the time, that we would constantly be changing things, adding new badges, removing badges, adding scoring rules, right?
But as you have noted before, once the system sort of gets out there and people get used to the way it works, there's a lot of belly aching when you change things. So there's some inertia that you start to get in the system around the way things are.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to just radically change course. I mean, our hope was during the private beta, we got all that stuff out of our system, all the major crazy changes. But we'll see.
I got a cowbell.
Oh, did the cowbell arrive? Did the tambourine arrive?
Yeah. Tambourine. I got to take that out. I'll take that out of the next question, but that's the cowbell.
Yeah. These are, these aren't random. These are actually rock band accessories for the vocalist. There's actually parts of the song where you can hit the cowbell and actually have it register and things like that.
Oh, you have to have it. I was looking for the USB port, and this just looks like a piece of metal. So I thought this was going to be a USB cowbell. I guess it's wireless or something. I don't see where you put in the batteries.
I'm excited that you are using it as a prop on our show. That makes it all worthwhile. It's excellent.
I should wait. I must have. I've got all this gear here now. I must have. For those of you that don't pay any attention to my website, I wrote up a little article last Friday, was it, about what all the gear is here on the new studio setup. I've actually got two mixers and recorder and all kinds of USB. It's a lot of gear, and the joke is that I think this entire thing could be done in software if I could just figure that stuff out.
Yeah, but it's fun to have knobs and dials.
The knobs and dials are fun, and there's flashing lights here that don't mean anything. For example, one of these mixers has a flashing light that says 152.2. I don't know what that means. I think that's the number of beats per minute.
But it looks
coming
cool.
From you, Jeff.
Looks complicated.
It does.
And interesting.
Anyway, Karma. I mean, I personally believe that almost anything you try to come up with will over time tend to create people gaming the system a little bit, and you know, maybe not non-optimal behavior that is point optimal but not site optimal. Like it optimizes for somebody's personal karma and not for the actual outcome that you want. And as that starts to happen, you have to constantly adjust and tweak these systems kind of endlessly.
Right.
I mean, you know, and that's what happened with PageRank, obviously, and Google's ranking algorithm is that they pretty much had to keep continuously adding new twists. What does the knob do on the cowbell?
But the central thing is still there. I mean, I agree that there's been all these new... It's funny because blogs were kind of an exploit of the PageRank system, in my opinion. Like,
yeah.
Because blogs, just the way they're constructed and the way people sort of form these communities and link to each other, just naturally, they're not trying to game the system. But it was like a huge PageRank farm, effectively. Mm-hmm. Like, I know Google did several updates related to blogs because it got ridiculous. I remember like some bloggers had like PageRank 7. Which is, I mean, that's astronomical. That's like, because it's a logarithmic scale, right? And on one end you have, like, you know, Apple.com and, you know, some of the really major sites, like some of the Google sites are PageRank 10, Wikipedia, things like that, and then PageRank 1. By the time you get to 4 and 5, you're a pretty serious website. And I was just surprised to see bloggers at 7, because I love my fellow bloggers, but good Lord, you know, they're not institutions unto themselves, although some of them might think that they are. So,
well, I for one have PageRank 7. So there.
But you're not a blogger.
Oh, yeah,
as you always tell us over and over again. So you don't count.
I notice you only have 6, Jeff.
You're one of those fancy writers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
With your words and your sentences and your paragraphs. I just use bullet points and pictures.
And maybe I don't mind being a blogger anymore. But, you know, I was thinking about the definition of a blog. You know, it's sort of changed a little bit. And it used to be more about the fact that you were linking. Mm-hmm. Like there used to be some implication that if you're a blogger, that what you're doing is sort of like, I don't know, Glenn Reynolds, where you just everything you write is two sentences, and it's just linking to other people writing longer form things. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a little bit of an implication of that in the idea of blogging. Now there isn't so much. I think now there's all kinds of different ways that blogs work. I think that's no longer. I think now the word either has no meaning, or it only means the reverse chronological order thing. Or, hey, let's not talk about blogging. That's boring.
Yes.
Let's talk about podcasting.
Yeah, that's much more exciting.
That's what people talk about on podcasts. So anything else we want to tell Christopher question? Leary here about karma systems? I think you do have to adjust it all the time. I think you have to come up with a first good guess. And you just have to be ready to tweak it and to watch what people are doing, watch what people are saying. But, you know, part of the reason I even thought that it was important to have the Stack Overflow podcast is that I really did want people, you know, this is something that kind of the community is going to pay attention to. And they're going to say, hey, I have an idea. Maybe I should get 6 points when I do this and only minus 2 points when I do that. And having those conversations kind of continuously is kind of important. And it's important for us to hear from the users of the site.
It is. It's important for them to go on User Voice and enter it, and then I'll decline it immediately.
Yeah, or just even better, call into the podcast hotline. By the way, I'm going to mention the phone number a couple of times because I want to encourage more calls. 646-826-3879. That's 646-826-3879, and that's a number where you can leave a voicemail for us to play on the show, and we need more questions. When you do call, please tell us your name and try to keep it to under 90 seconds. All right. Another question?
Sure. Let's do it.
This was sort of mentioned by, we touched
hey,
upon
Jeff and
this.
Joel. Downvoting. Basically, not all downvotes are created equal. People who go around just downvoting everybody, their voice shouldn't really have as much weight as somebody who's very selective. So what do you think about a system where the voter's reputation is a multiple? So people who have better reputation, their votes count more. What do you think? Bye.
So I guess you were very much against this idea? So.
I think it's very, for lack of a better word, undemocratic. I mean, the idea that your vote counts for more than mine. I mean, mm-hmm. There was a gem of something in there that's a little bit interesting that we've thought about, which is we have had incidences of people who they get pissed off at another user, so they go in and downvote everything that user has ever done, right? Well, okay, first of all, it's not as bad as it sounds because an upvote is worth five times as much as a downvote. So it would take five downvotes to cancel out one upvote. So there's a limited amount of damage you can do. Plus, you only have 30 votes in a 24-hour period anyway. So you can only do that on, you know, 30 posts by that user. But still, it is aggravating, and I totally empathize with people that are complaining because this is annoying. And somebody told me that the way Reddit, and it might even have been you, I don't remember, Mr. Reddit fan, but on Reddit they track this, and if they see a user like just consistently downvoting another user, they basically silently undo all those votes, like those don't even count.
I do. I do not remember saying that, but you know what? That just occurred to me that we should get we should get on as a guest some of those Reddit guys, like Steve
your
or Alexis,
your bestest pals,
my best friend.
That would be cool,
Alexis. Or yes. He's in a band called Bread Pig. Are you familiar with that band?
I am not familiar with Bread Pig.
They play the rock band instruments without the Xbox.
The Bread Pig.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah, definitely. Let's get him on. That's doubly awesome now. I'm totally convinced. Joel and I have been talking more about getting more guests on because I think it just livens up the show. And plus, we get to broaden, you know, our horizons a little bit, which is always kind of nice.
Yeah, and we get better ratings when it's just not like this old couple, you and me, just
whiling away the hours, yeah. Sipping on our Bartles and James on the porch.
That's what it's going to be eventually, isn't it?
Yes.
We just need to find a place where we can both move.
Yeah. One final thing on that question. Another thing that's been floated, and well, I guess you kind of talked about this, is just sort of a logarithmic thing of, you know, instead of having something have a bajillion votes where another post has four, mm-hmm. some sort of normalization you do,
yeah,
where your deviation's above the mean. And I'm kind of open to that, but I just think it's kind of complicated to figure out versus the whole one man, one vote thing, which people kind of get.
Well, what I'm wondering is, what's it going to be like when there are people out there with, 100,000 karma? And, are new people going to come in and say, well, I can never achieve that kind of karma, so there's just no point, and just lose interest?
Another thing that's been floated is, and I think some communities do this, once you get to a certain level, you just have max. That's
Ooh.
The number... You're at max, and then, we could cap it that way, so it doesn't feel like, oh, because eventually somebody will have 20K rep, which is just, that's huge, right? I mean, we're almost at the point where someone has 10K.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we should
have
a cap.
I only have like 2,000. How about nobody can have more than Joel?
Because the intent of the system is that we trust you. Reputation doesn't mean that you're a genius or that you know everything there is to know about anything at all, actually. It just means that Stack Overflow, the system, trusts you.
Yeah.
And once you get to a very high level of trust, you're just infinitely trusted.
I don't really like the max idea. I feel like you should be able to just, you should always have something more to strive for.
Yeah. No,
I mean, max is, you got elected president of the United States of America.
Well, we've also thought about maybe extending some moderator privileges to other users. Just so that, if we're not around, if, you, me, the four moderators that we have. Although, yeah. to be clear, almost everything in the system, users can do the essential things that need to happen on the site. But there's some unusual things that might happen.
Yeah. Also, I've never really used my moderator privileges except for once, and then I messed it up because I thought I was just flagging something and I was actually banning a user for life. I don't remember what I did.
Yeah. So,
so I'm not really moderating properly.
Yes, yes. That user, I think, felt very chastised by that accidentally. He actually emailed me. That was kind of funny. So what Joel is referring to is normally you can vote something offensive or flag something offensive. And once you get to a certain threshold of offensive, it's sort of soft, automatically deleted, and so on and so forth. But what Joel didn't realize is as a moderator, your offensive vote is like binding and permanent. Like if you cast an offensive vote, it's like immediately you reach the threshold. One of the very few sort of special things about moderators. So when Joel did that, he banished the post. He thought he was just casting an innocent little flag, but no, he was removing the post. So,
yeah. I have a question.
Are you in the list of questioners? Did you call
no.
the number?
All right,
did you
mind.
Leave your name?
Okay,
did
sorry.
You?
It's all right. I won't ask it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Kind of got a new system here. So I'm, reputation, downvoting. I feel like you should be able to go on forever, just earning some kind of additional points, but maybe not in a way that discourages new users from. Like maybe there's something about maybe your karma kind of rots if you don't keep it up to date.
That's another thing that's been floated, but I don't know. I mean, gosh, some of this stuff, I feel like you'd have to just throw it out there and try it and see what the reaction is. Mm-hmm. But some of it's so broad and so sweeping. It's such a major change to behavior that, gosh, I worry about that, particularly like that one. If people come in, because already people freak out if their reputation changes by any way they don't understand. So if there's this global thing where every week everybody's rep drops, unless they've participated. Like say you go a week without doing something, so your rep would drop.
Well, maybe you have two kinds of rep. You got old rep, which is shown in Roman numerals, and you always get to keep that. But it's old-fashioned, which is why it's in Roman numerals.
Yes, that's great. That sounds simple and very easy to understand, the system that you're describing. I don't think anyone would be confused. I don't think I would get any emails about that.
Get that. You just have to explain it in the blog. All right, let's go on to another question here. This is a good one.
Hi, Joel and Jeff. This is Jeff Metzner from Exton, Pennsylvania. I'm a C++ programmer. And here's my Stack Overflow-related question. It's about anybody being able to edit any post on the site, reputation dependent, of course, which I generally think is a good thing, especially for the technical questions. However, it just occurred to me that I recently answered a question about job experiences with a personal anecdote, and whether such questions should be allowed or not is a whole separate question, which I'll come back to some other time. But it occurred to me, as I say, that I answered this question with a personal anecdote, and then if anyone is allowed to edit that, then that means that I could go back someday and find something with my name next to it that actually does not reflect my experience, which with a technical question is not such a big deal because presumably they would be correcting my mistakes. But with a subjective answer, they're potentially putting words in your mouth. So I was wondering what your opinion was about that. Thank you. Bye.
I think that's a great point. I mean, Joel, did you want to run with that?
Well, you've thought about this, so no, actually, you know, one thing is that the personal anecdote, I kind of have to see the question, but what we've really been envisioning is, like I say, the Wikipedia of the long tail of programming questions. So, you know, a good answer does not necessarily, should not really, this isn't a discussion group. It's not a place to tell your life story. It's a place to provide encyclopedia-like answers to questions. You know, the best answers are the ones that are the most, technical term I'm looking for? The most encyclopediac. You know, what are the qualities of an encyclopedia article? No point of view, balanced, clear explanations, no assumptions about what the reader knows or how advanced they are.
Have you been to Stack Overflow recently? I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, because what you're describing, I got to tell you, yeah.
Doesn't exist.
Some of them are like that. I think
a lot of them are like that. Well, you know, the ones that you hate the most are all the subjective ones, which are like, you know, what's everybody's favorite keyboard?
Wait. Okay, first of all, hate is a strong word. I don't hate anything on Stack Overflow. Oh, yeah. I may dislike and disagree with some of the things. I don't hate anything that's on Stack Overflow.
Your pet peeve is the subjective ones.
I hate you, Joel Spolsky, but, you know, the stuff on the site, I, you know, try to stay more apart from.
Sniff.
I know. He's very sensitive.
I'm putting your volume down 20% now, which now is this for Jeff's volume. Let's see. Here we go.
I think a lot of the tension in Stack Overflow, and I think it's an interesting tension, comes from the fact that we're trying to blend these two things that essentially are like oil and water. One is that the concept of shared ownership, like Wikipedia, right, where nothing is signed, mm-hmm. right? There's no article. It's like, this is the asphalt article by Joe Schmo. It's just, this is the asphalt article. So you give up identity. There's no reputation system. There's certainly no upvoting on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, we have all these things in our system. So we're trying to serve two masters. And I think it can get sketchy, right? I mean, there's places around the boundaries of our system where it doesn't really fit very well. But I think, again, it depends what you're putting in and what you want to get out of the system. I mean, if you put in a lot of this really subjective stuff, then yeah. But I think there's also the risk for anything you put on Stack Overflow, somebody could change it to, I'm an idiot, right? Like, you go in and write like a really nice response, and then I could go in and change it to, you know what? I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
But it's visible. It's all visible. It's all public. And when users do bad things, what I love about Stack Overflow is there's nothing moderator secret-y that I really do. Mm-hmm. There's a couple queries that we have that eventually I want to expose to people. But I would just go in and look at a user's history just like you would. If I see a user going in and changing a bunch of people's stuff to, I'm an idiot, the first thing I'm going to do is delete everything that user ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that user effectively disappears from the system, and that's like a one-click operation for me, literally.
I like it.
Yeah, I know, it's awesome. So I can undo lots of vandalism, like really quickly. And this is
Jeff, you have a one-click way to delete all the changes. It's like somebody's gone and edited 30 things.
Yes,
you can roll back all their edits in one click.
That user and everything they did ceases to exist. This is obviously why that's something I don't. I'm really nervous about extending that to anyone outside of our little cabal.
Well, when they get 148,000 karma, you know, right. You can have a badge. You know what we could have badges for? We could have badges for, like, real address. Like, I have proven that you live at a certain address. And then certain things could only be turned on if we can actually go to your house. Not that we will, but we could.
We could.
And then you just use one of these. There are these online services that will mail a postcard to an address with a code on it. And if they type it in correctly, then you register that they at least control the mail that goes to that address.
Well, one of the ideas that Michael had in, I think, two podcasts ago when we were in New York City was the idea of making up Stack Overflow t-shirts and some sort of little mini swag things that we would actually send to people once they get to certain rep levels just for fun.
And they would have to send a photograph of them wearing it with a code on it. And then they could get...
once we have their address and stuff, they have sort of semi-proven, you know, I mean, that... So that's along the same lines of, like, if we're going to send people stuff, we would have to actually know who they are and where they live to some degree. So, I don't know. I'm open to that.
Swag. Okay, call in if you have any suggestions for what kind of swag we should have from Stack Overflow, 646-826-3879. See, I'm doing it like the talk radio host, guys.
Right. I don't think I have a perfect answer for that question. I think there's always going to be that tension in our system because on some level, it's just not it can't really be resolved. Really not seeing a lot of those kind of problems. I mean, we talk about them, and I think this is what I like about...
Yeah, it's more theoretical problem than an actual problem.
Well, but even on like my blog, Coding Horror, anybody can post anything in Coding Horror, right? I don't authenticate anything, and I have to go in manually and delete stuff. It's just incredibly brutal because... my tooling sucks. It's a long story. But honestly, I don't have to do it that much. Really. It surprises me how little I have to do it. And you have a lot of people watching the system in Stack Overflow. And if they see other people messing you up, they're going to be the Good Samaritan and they're going to clean up. Mm-hmm. It really does work. I've seen questions come in that were just horrible questions, unbelievably bad. And people go in and fix them. It's miraculous. They take it, a bad question, they edit the title, they edit the body, they edit tags, and you end up with this really nice question with these great responses. And it's all based on these little slices of effort that people are contributing. So I would hope those little slices of effort would also contribute to helping you protect yourself from malicious users. Other people will help you in the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of those cases, especially if it's just like badly worded questions or like bad English, bad grammar written by a non-native speaker, etc. And it's really cool that those get fixed.
It's fun to fix other people's stuff. It's really this collaborative thing. Yeah. Like one of my favorite things to do in Stack Overflow is find a user with reputation of one that has just asked a question that I like, and then I upvote it. And I get this little thrill of like, wow, I just gave them their first badge. And I don't know. It's just crazy.
Hey, that reminds me. One of the things that is underutilized, one of the features that is underutilized at Stack Overflow is just the voting on questions in general. I think a lot of people don't even get why it's there. They don't vote. It's not... You know what I mean? Voting for questions, not for answers.
Right. No, I'm with you. I think the more sophisticated Stack Overflow users do get voting for questions. And there have been actually several really good topics on Stack Overflow. They were meta topics. But still, they were good. And examinations are like why you would vote for questions and how you should vote for questions. Of course, getting people to read that is another...
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the hot list right now, the current hot list. And, you know, there's some questions like 13 votes. But, I mean, we really need to get it like 100 votes for the good questions, because I really want the hot list to be, and maybe this is just because nobody comes in, the hot page isn't the default, not enough people paying attention to the hot list. I really think the hot list should be the default, not the newest, but my feeling is that the hot list is a place where you go and you find the voter.
Hot list is the default. It is the default.
Oh.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it's just second.
Oh, you want it to be the very first tab. So you want it to be the first tab.
I just misinterpreted that it was... not the default because it wasn't the first tab. But because it always remembers what you stuck it on. So I'm never going to see what the default is again.
Yes.
In my life. But my idea of the hot list is that if you don't have any questions and you just want to learn something new about programming, that those would be things people had voted up because they were just of general interest. You know, I thought they were just like interesting questions. Somebody thought they were interesting questions. And that list would give you a whole bunch of interesting things to learn about. Actually, it is almost working. You know, there are pretty interesting questions on there right now.
No, totally. And I encourage people, anyone listening, please vote for the questions that you like. I mean, there are, again, and I've talked about this on previous podcasts, but I continue to see it over and over in the system. Some people are really good at asking questions, and they should get upvoted for that, and you should pay attention to that. And conversely, I've seen people complain that they didn't like the answers they got, and a lot of the time, I don't want to blame the victim kind of thing here, but I gotta say,
you shouldn't have been wearing that dress.
Asking, a good question is an art. If you get really bad answers that are totally not what you wanted, you got to really look at your question. Because, I mean, I know this from just writing my blog. If I write my blog entries a certain way, I get these really bizarre responses that are not at all about what I wrote about. Mm-hmm. And I consider that my fault, right? Like, I didn't do a good job of communicating what the blog entry was about. And it's hard. I'll be the first to say it's very, very hard. It's just like writing. It's difficult. But you got to concentrate on asking a clear, focused question. Mm-hmm. And if the first time you don't get it right, either edit the question and make it better or just, you know, say, you know what, I'm just going to ask a whole new question, link it to the second one, and then just, you know, ask again with a better formulation to get better answers.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes people don't even know what they're asking. Like they're not quite sure what they've done wrong, you know, or what the... Sometimes they're asking a question that's like a little bit too specific, like... You know, how do I make this particular error message go away? And it's actually like, well, you need to re-ask yourself the question of why you're even trying to do that thing in general, because it doesn't even make sense in this case.
Have you read Eric Raymond's, I think it's Eric Raymond's, How to Ask Questions, like this epic 100,000 word?
And that's the thing that he tried to encourage people to like use as the answer to all Usenet questions that they don't feel like answering right now. It's like point everybody to how to ask questions.
Well, this is why I say I think the more sophisticated Stack Overflow users are the ones that actually vote for questions. Maybe we should have some sort of promotional thing or bonus that comes with that, because they appreciate how difficult it is to actually ask a good question.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't. And the irony of you know, the thing that Eric Raymond wrote is that the type of people that ask bad questions are not going to read this giant treatise on how to ask questions, right? Mm-hmm. It's this total catch-22 of a problem. So, I don't know. It's just like, who does that document actually serve at that point? It's just like masturbation for someone.
It's just the way you can be like one of these annoying programmers, which is like, I'm not going to answer your question because you did not read this entire document.
But, you know, on Stack Overflow, the advantage is, unlike Usenet, people go in and fix your question. Mm-hmm. And I won't give you my whole diatribe, but I've seen it happen again and again. People mm-hmm. come in and help mm-hmm. you fix your question. And it feels good. It feels good to help other people. I don't know why. It's really... It's addictive. Like, even I, having built the system, I'm frankly a little bit sick of it at this point, just because I'm doing it all day, every day. And but I get totally sucked into it. Like, I'll spend hours, literally, just clicking around Stack Overflow, editing stuff, looking at stuff, like learning stuff. I mean, the system is incredibly addictive even to me. So I guess, I mean, that's fair, since we were the target audience. So I guess it would be a failure if that was not true.
Yep.
But this is, I enjoy using the system, so... For what it's worth.
Okay. What was the question again? The question, Jeff's question. Are we still on that one? Anecdote. What if people editing your anecdote and stuff like that?
Right.
That was the question, right?
Yep. I think you have to sort of trust.
There was something I wanted to say, which is trusting. But also, you know what? Format it as an anecdote. Just in your question, say, you know, like indent it and put quotes around it and then put a dash dash and then your name and make it look like a quote. Make it look like something where nobody's going to go in there and really... mundle with it. There's one other thing, Jeff, which I'm not sure if you're aware of. This is sort of one of the more subtle features of Stack Overflow, is this idea of too much editing causes a post to flip over to being a community post. And you can also flag anything you want to be a community post, and that gets your name off of something. So if you're telling a personal story, or if you're doing something that you don't want to, basically, whatever it is, you don't want your name signed on that forever as other people edit it and God only knows what they're going to do with it over the years, then you can just sort of throw it into community ownership and your name doesn't show up on it at all.
Yes, excellent point, and I should have mentioned that.
So, the community things. Where is that? I'm looking for the... I guess I didn't...
It's a very subtle checkbox, and this is intentional. It's very subtle. Under the actual input area where you type in your post, there's a checkbox.
And it says community wiki. Which may be confusing to people may not know.
Well, there is a little bit of a mouse over that explains a little bit
deeper. It says, community-owned posts do not generate any reputation for the owner and have a lower reputation barrier for collaborative editing. It should also say, you know, and will not be signed. Right?
True.
That's another, well, I mean, that may be one of the main points to the user, the main feature that they see, the main reason they may do this is to get their name off of that.
I'm going to make a note and I'll add that to that.
By the time you hear this podcast, that may be fixed.
Yeah. Yes. Let's do the next question.
Next question. Last one, and this is a really good one, actually.
Hey, guys. Just wondering why we can't ask IT questions.
I don't really know who this is from. So, somebody called this in and did not leave their name. So, random anonymous person.
I know it's a programming site, but really, you guys have such a great resource that the rest of us are sort of left to, you know, experts exchange. And, I know Joel has said, Jeff has said, you know, 3 to 6 months out, but I would love something in the interim. Thanks.
So what he's asking for, this anonymous person, I'm guessing it's presidential candidate John McCain calling. What
it's Anon E. Moose. Remember Anon E. Moose?
Oh yeah, it's the Moose. I think what he's asking is, like, you know, IT questions, like how do I get a Cisco router to blah blah to the whatever the or how do I get Windows to, you know, delete a DLL from the subdirectory with the, you know, those kind of questions.
This is a recurring question, and it's a great question to get because people like the system, so it's a compliment, and I treat it like a compliment, but I also have to do my decline thing. But it's when I decline, let me be clear, for everybody that participates on User Voice, when I decline, that doesn't mean you suck. It doesn't mean your idea sucks.
Wait.
It doesn't mean we're never going to do it.
Before you decline this one, let me just highlight that I will agree with you that when somebody says, I would like to license the site and use it for, you know, questions that people have, programming, you know, the USB port of the Fostix MR16 recording mixer device, because that's what I have in front of me. But when people come, you know, want a too narrow, you know, when they want a personal private label, white label, let me start again. This is different than what you say 3 to 6 weeks, where you say, no, we're not going to do white label versions because, you know, they won't get the scale and it's just not our priority. And the reason I think this is different is I think that another site just like Stack Overflow that was for IT questions, or maybe even our site that just allowed IT questions, would be just as big as Stack Overflow. It would have just as many people. It would have just as interesting questions. They would be questions that had real answers. It would benefit just as much from the wiki editing, rating, ranking, all that stuff. So I think it's a little different than those other things which you just immediately...
Well, no, I disagree. I mean, I think I'm saying the same thing as you. I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying the same thing as you. I see a total need for a sister site, what I call a sister site, for people who aren't programmers but are in IT.
Yeah.
So
maybe they are programmers. I think that's not what their questions are about.
It is probably the most obvious thing for us to do. I think it would... Like you said, it would be at least as successful as Stack Overflow, and Stack Overflow has done really well. So I'm assuming that would do really well too. Mm-hmm. But at this point, it's just a question of resources and manpower. And plus, I really don't think we're really not fully baked on Stack Overflow. I know it seems that way.
We seem totally baked.
We seem totally baked.
Yeah, we are the most baked people.
Yes. But I feel like it's not really there yet. I think... I'm flirting with the idea of pulling the beta tag off our site, at least the disclaimer at the top of the page, at the end of the month. I'm really flirting with that because I feel like we've gotten all the major things that I wanted in at that point. Not that there's not more to do, but even then, I would like some more burn-in time. And that's why I keep quoting the 3 to 6 month time period. I think that would be the same time period for setting up a sister site, because I would want to recruit
3 to 6
people.
Months just means like not working on it right now, but I might. Could be.
Well, I want to also acknowledge that I agree there's a lot of merit in the idea. There's a lot of
the main thing. I mean, let's take this from a purely selfish perspective. You know, what's to stop somebody else from doing this and capturing all that benefit, you know, of all our great idea? Not that, you know, it's such a hard idea, but what's to stop somebody else from making one of these things before we do.
Well, that's kind of a little bit of what I was getting at. Like, I would want to recruit the right people to run the site from day one. Like, people that could sort of be its caretakers, like what we do.
That's
I mean, there needs
question.
To be a cabal.
Who are the Jeff Atwood and Joel Spolskys of IT?
That's exactly what I'm getting at. And that's the first thing
is
I would want to do. You got to build it that way, right?
Of,
I mean, the code is the code. I mean, that's not really the point. It's the people.
Would you want it to be? Would you want it to really be a separate database, or just like a bit that every post has, and it's really kind of the same site.
I really think it should be a totally different site. Not because I want to do this segregation thing,
it's kind
but
of
because
weird,
I think
know.
It's a community that deserves its own space. You know,
Microsoft has MSDN, and then they have TechNet, and those have always been sort of separate, very separate things. But
and if you've ever been to conferences where they mix those two things, you
yes.
understand why that is. Certainly from that's generally regarded as a good thing.
But there's so many things that are kind of weird. Like, where does, you know, Excel macro programming belong? Is that TechNet because it's Microsoft Office, or is it MSDN because it's programming? You know, there really is a lot of overlap, and a lot of what IT people do with programming.
I don't think it's that overlappy, personally. I would definitely put that in the TechNet bin.
Boy, was I pissed when they did that with my nice documentation about the Excel C API. I was like, this is programming documentation. It should be an MSDN. It's all the other programming documentation.
No, it's for the script kiddies. That's who it's for.
Yeah. It was C. It was the C interface.
Oh, while we're on this topic, I need to apologize to all the C programmers. One thing that's really
already just preemptively apologize even before.
Well, I want to apologize because I've been
even before you've done something wrong.
It's a moderately long story, but first of all, I've been really pleasantly surprised. We have a huge audience of C and C++ programmers, way more than I thought we would.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, maybe that's the people you brought to the table, which is great.
Maybe it's because they're working in these horrible programming languages. They need help every minute of every day to be able to get the most basic things done.
There's a really vibrant community, a subsection of C programmers. And one thing we did with tagging mm-hmm. was when we started defining what the character set is, the allowable character set for tags.
Ah, yes.
I looked at what actually we were using, like what actual programmer things people were using, what they were putting in the system. And from there, I sort of reverse engineered, these are the characters we should allow.
Mm-hmm.
One side effect of that is we allow plus in our tag names, which is kind of annoying in retrospect because the traditional tag systems where you're combining tags in the URL
mm-hmm.
use a plus. I mean, this is how Flickr does it. This
right,
is how
right,
a lot
right,
of
right,
places
right.
do it. Well, the minute you do that, it's awkward for us because it's hard for us to tell the difference between GDI plus and GDI plus plus some other tag.
Yeah.
So as a result, I've been sort of playing with the algorithm and trying to like hack it up and make it work because we can use spaces or pluses. And the current code path is if I see that behavior in the tags, I go to the space code path and it's space delimited. Either one works actually, but we require it in that case.
Yeah.
But as a side effect of doing that, I've been breaking the C++ tag like every other day because I always forget to check the C++ tag, which is stupid because it's a really popular tag, but
it
I
is.
Don't click on it because I'm not a C++ programmer, so I don't
it's
think
the
about
fifth, it's the fifth most so, popular tag.
I know. I'm telling you, it's really popular. So
yeah.
I want to apologize to all the C++ programmers. I feel really bad about this because every time I do that, I see a ticket on User Voice and I sort of smack my head and I curse myself. So I apologize for that. So now that I've got my little apology out of the way, is that all the questions that we had?
Was that any of the questions? Oh, wait, did we even answer that question? Oh, yeah, IT.
Yeah, we answered it.
Yeah,
we want to do it. We want to do it. We need to identify the Joel Spolsky and Jeff Atwood of the IT world and have them own it and have a relationship with them. And that's how I would like to do it personally. Obviously, this is subject to negotiation and things like that. But
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
We have one more question, but it's not really related to Stack Overflow.
Hi, Joel
but
and Jeff.
Change of
this
pace.
This is Miles Dent.
Well, that's all right. Got away from me. Start over.
Hi, Joel and Jeff. This is Miles Dennis from England. I've just formed a company with a primary goal of developing a new software product. There are two of us currently, both experienced developers, but not able to dedicate all of our time to coding. Very shortly, we will need to take on another developer, and I'm a great believer in the philosophy of recruiting people who are both smart and get things done.
Ah.
My question is, for a cost-conscious startup, where do you see the balance between taking on inexperienced staff that cost less versus experienced staff costing more? Is there a certain experience level you would see as a minimum, no matter how smart they are? Thanks, and good luck with Stack Overflow.
Well, I have a couple things to say here. And then, Jeff, maybe
take
you want
away.
To talk about some of your experience.
No.
Stack Overflow
take it away.
Team. A couple of things. First of all, if you're recruiting for a startup, the truth is that all developers should be about the same price. And the reason I say that is that you're going to have, no matter what you do, you're going to have trouble. To get somebody to come join a startup that's not yet quite that's not necessarily profitable yet, or that's not really in the clear. You're looking for somebody who's willing to take more risk, and there are different categories of people that are willing to take the risk of joining a startup. And one category is young people that don't feel like they have anything to lose. They don't have to make their mortgage payments. They don't have a family to support yet. And, you know, worst comes to worst, they can always move back in with mom or mum, as the case may be if you're in England. So, or move in with a queen mum, which would be funny. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of...
Where did that come from?
I don't know. It just made sense. Like, oh, my startup failed and I had to move in with a queen mum. Nice old lady. Anyway, now I'm concerned. Is she still alive?
I have no idea.
This is our English listeners are just agog now that we're going on with this. I'm sorry.
See, this is you started this though. You totally, yeah.
The Queen Mother.
Yeah.
I'm looking it up on Wikipedia right now. Recent British Queen Mothers. Queen Elizabeth. Wow. You know, she died in 2002. So wow. I guess nobody will be moving in with her. What were we talking about? Young people are willing to join startups because they have nothing to lose. And the other category are fairly experienced people are willing to join startups if they have some savings and they're looking for an opportunity to do something more interesting. You know, maybe somebody who's been stuck in a big company for 10 or 15 years, or maybe they've already made a bunch of money from their stock options from the first company that they worked at, and now they have enough savings that they're comfortable to take a year or two and do something a little riskier. And in both cases, that's the audience you're looking for. And in neither case are you going to be hiring people that are sensitive as to what the exact salary is. Startups just pay less out the door than companies that have already been successful, because hopefully those people that you hire will get some equity and they'll get some kind of ownership in the whole thing. And that's really what they're working for. So this really, first of all, it really shouldn't be an issue for you. You can look for experienced people or inexperienced people, and you're going to pay them mostly with equity anyway. So that's the first part. The second part is that the difference in experience between, say, I don't know, like a 25-year-old programmer and a 30-year-old programmer, maybe not as much as you think, because programmers tend to start young. And if both of them have been programming since they were 10, then, you know, even the 25-year-old programmer may actually have a lot more coding experience than a 30 or 35-year-old programmer who, you know, maybe was in management for a while or something like that. So we're in sort of a unique profession where even the people that are coming to us, you know, when I do interviews of people coming to me straight from campus and they're like juniors applying for an internship straight from campus, they could well have 6 to 8 years of programming experience. That would not be that unusual. You know, just because people start programming when they're young often, and then they learn a lot of hobbyist programmers and that kind of stuff.
I guess the only observation I have is maybe you got to make what you're doing fun and exciting and to attract people, right? I mean, maybe this is the backwards way to think of it. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something really cool, people will want to work on it naturally. I mean, that's how programmers are. They want to work on, you know, whatever's cool and hot and interesting and neat and fun. So maybe that's the thing to think more about rather than how much we need to pay these people. It's like, how do we make what we're doing awesome, right? Yeah. So yeah, that we automatically attract people to our project.
Right. Right.
So.
Yep. And, you know, there's a lot of things that motivate people. There may be, you know, if you're located in a weird part of the country where it's hard to get good programming jobs, you know, and you're the one programming shop in the area, it'll be pretty easy to hire. If you're located, you know, if you're the only company that has a good vacation policy, here in the U.S., it's fairly typical vacation policy is 2 weeks of vacation a year. So it's really basically 10 days off a year. And at Fog Creek, we just have double that. So that already makes us, you know, there are already people that want to work at Fog Creek specifically because they really like the fact that we have a generous vacation policy.
They want to work there because they don't have to work.
Kind of.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome. I mean, I'm kidding, but
Well, you know what it is that different people want to make different trade-offs. And for some people, that's, you know, there is always a class of people that are going to take less salary in exchange for more vacation. And to the company, you know, why would all companies offer the same mixture of vacation and salary when you can offer a different mixture and attract people that, you know, have a different sensitivity to those different issues.
Sure. No, I totally believe that. And for the record, when Jeff Jarrett and I were in New York at the Fog Creek offices, I think Jeff and Jarrett were both like, wow, wouldn't it be cool to work for Fog Creek?
So, yeah. Hey, really guys, works. We're hiring. Sorry. Jeff, cover your ears.
Yes.
Did we sign anything that said that Fog Creek couldn't poach Stack Overflow employees? Not that we would.
we wouldn't remember explicitly
promising not to poach them.
Yep. So let's do the trail out. You want to say the number again?
What's the trail out? If you have any questions for the Stack Overflow podcast, we'd love to hear them. Why don't you give us a call? The number is 646-826-3879. Don't forget to mention your name there and where you're calling from, and try to keep it to under 90 seconds. Or you can record an audio file in either MP3 or Ogg Vorbis format and email it to podcast@stackoverflow.com. We've got a transcript wiki, which is getting a little bit behind, so I'd like to encourage you, if you'd like to volunteer and do a service for the hearing impaired, it'd be really nice if you could go to blog.stackoverflow.com and click on the wiki link there for every podcast episode and edit that with the transcript of what we're saying here. And finally, I think I should have had one more thing there, but I ran out of things to say. So we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Stack Overflow with Jeff Atwood and Joel Spolsky.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media. The post-production audio engineer for this program was Joel Spolsky. Our website editor was Jeff Atwood. The series producer is Jeff Atwood.
This is Phil Windley. I hope you'll join me next time for another great presentation from Stack Overflow here on IT Conversations.